This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Ryan Glover attends Vancouver Island University. He's a mature student about to complete a degree in liberal studies. Ryan was once in active addiction and living on the streets of Victoria, Nanaimo. He's credited his post-secondary studies, and specifically VIU's Adult Basic Education Program, with helping him to change his life. Ryan Glover's in the studio with us today. Welcome, Ryan.
Welcome.
Tell us something about your early life. Give us a sense of who you were and what was going on in your childhood and school and stuff.
Sure, okay. I have a younger sister, and we were raised by a single parent, my mom, who worked very hard to keep a roof over our head, fed, clothing, in school. But unfortunately, as a single parent, she couldn't be there to watch us all the time and what we were up to and what we were doing and how we were doing. And eventually, slowly but surely, I started to gravitate towards individuals who, like to get high, like to skip school, and it just went from there.
What grade were you in when you started to drift into the drug life?
Grade 6, I believe. So it was quite, I don't know, but I would say it was quite early. At that point, we used to skip school and sniff glue in back alleys, and that's where, how, and why I started to get high. Yeah.
You told the Nanaimo Daily News that you were unsure if you had completed grade 9. What happened during that period of time? What was happening in junior high school as you became a little older?
Okay, when I did attend school, it was a very, I didn't enjoy the experience at all. For some reason, in some way, I got centered out, and I ended up getting, into scraps and fights and bullying, and eventually, it didn't take very long, and one day I just opened up my mom's purse when she was sleeping, grabbed whatever money was there, and I left, and that was that. I did speak to her about it, and I did, the school was aware of it, but I don't know what to say about, I just... Mm-hmm.
So you left home in grade 9?
That's why when I refer to, I think I had about grade 9. Yeah, I don't think I'm... It was around grade 8, grade 9.
That, so you would have been 14 or 15?
Something like that, that age.
Yeah. And how did alcohol and drugs stream into your life at that point?
It was something that I was always involved in, and it with drugs and alcohol, I drank a lot, with just going to parties and whatnot. I didn't like to smoke pot in that sense. It just, people would tell me how they, enjoyed. I thought it was a horrible experience, and I couldn't understand why people smoked the stuff. But anyway, tried ecstasy and DMT. I could just, acid, mushroom, all of them, just ran through the whole camp, but it wasn't until I tried meth, crystal meth, for the first time that my life changed dramatically and instantly.
And what happened from there?
What happened from there? My first question was, where's this been all my life? I immediately felt that this is what I was missing in life. This is something that made me feel like I had a place in the world, that I belonged. Like, up until that point, I just felt like there was something wrong with me, that I just didn't fit in, that I, was uncomfortable in almost every situation I was involved in. And that immediately took care of that problem right away. And so it's, not having known anything about that drug, that was the first time I ever heard of it, and I just followed it wherever it led me, and it led me right to the streets, and I lived there for many, many years.
So the phrase drug of choice, which people often use when talking about addiction and recovery experiences, would you then say that crystal methamphetamine was your drug of choice? Is that what happened?
I would say it, yeah, definitely, most definitely. I hear other people who are recovering from other drugs speak of their drug of choice in other ways, and you know, yeah, definitely a drug of choice. I can understand that one.
Right, and you became homeless then?
And I stayed homeless for quite some time.
Tell us more about your experience living on the streets and living in a homeless state of existence.
Sure. You know, one thing that's been happening in my life today is I've been acquiring some media attention in this radio station and some publicity, you know, for the experiences, you know, that I have come through. But what I've noticed is that, you know, I've tried to avoid this conversation. You know, all I'm doing right now is being reminded of what it was like. And I'm sorry to sort of sidestep your question, but homelessness is a horrible experience. It's you know, sure, you don't have shelter, but what you see, you know, going on around on the streets is. You know, there's no love. It's predator prey. It's abusive. It's violent. And it's chaotic. So I just wanted to stress that
And my brother lived that life for many years, so I understand what you're talking about, too. And one of the things that happens is you get involved in small-time crime as well. And I understand that was part of your experience as well.
That eventually became part of my experience, you know, because at, you know, to face life on a daily basis when you're at that point in your life, you know, the only answer tends to be more dope, you know. So, yeah, you wake up in the morning, and I was usually woken up at about 5:30 in the morning by sprinklers because I had fallen asleep. You know, I liked churches. They were still a sanctuary for me, so I'd, you know, go to sleep, you know, beside a church and some bushes, and usually wake up around 5:30 because of a sprinkler system, having whatever I had on me stolen. And so what do? You know, you end up, I was going to a couple places that would serve donuts and coffee, and then it's like, okay, how do you go get more? And theft, you know, women, I found that in various crack shacks or, you know, women were pointed towards prostitution, and men were towards crime, other forms of crime, I should say. Mm-hmm.
The year 2002, you described that as the year that you hit bottom.
Mm-hmm.
What came about there?
A lot of pain. You know, physical pain, like I've mentioned a few times in my story that I've been telling, is I ended up being tied up and held down and tortured for, you know, I don't know how long, and left on the streets to basically die, and I didn't, and it was somebody who threw some spare change at me that moment, and I was so upset that somebody, how dare they would throw spare change at me, who did they think they were, and then something clicked, and I looked around, man, and I was the only one on the street, sitting on the corner, you know, and I referred to it as a bubble, and this, you know, I felt, it was the first time that I actually looked at myself, and I thought, you know, I'm the only one in this position, And I prayed for the first time, and I thought, you know, because I grew up in this kind of life, it was, you know, recovery is so foreign to me, and I just my prayer went something like, I don't know what's going on, I don't know what the problem is, but this isn't how life was supposed to, like how it's supposed to be lived, and I will do whatever I need to do to never end up where I was at that moment ever again.
You entered detox in Nanaimo and went into recovery in Nanaimo as well. What was your early experience of recovery about and like for you?
You know, I like to look back and think that, you know, one day I just decided at that moment that, you know, I was just going to clean up and, you know, make some changes. It was a slow process. It took time. It took a couple years, actually, to you know, work very hard at just staying away from using drugs at that point. excuse me. You know, I was in a detox a couple of times and left, and then finally I ended up in a treatment house here in Nanaimo called Surfside, and I literally, in order to stay there, had to visualize nails being pounded into my feet. I didn't leave my bed for a long time because, you know, it took some time because I thought that I looked at myself as a virus, you know, and I didn't want to interact with anybody because I didn't want to infect them. I don't know how to, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just, and I started to eat there, and I started to get some sleep, and I started to listen to what was being said about addiction in general, and I could identify, you know, yeah, that's me. Yeah, I've done that. That's how I think. Yeah, I've done, been there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was a lot of, it just affirmed, like it just showed that, you know, and I was open and I was listening to what was being told.
Ryan, you've spoken at length about adult basic education, which is offered at Vancouver Island University. And I know that you've talked about the impact that had on your recovery and still has on your recovery. I'm wondering if you could help us understand how you ended up back in post-secondary education after entering recovery. What was that process like, and what does ABE mean in the context of all that?
Well, ABE was huge for me, you know, and while I was in treatment, we did have a couple hour lectures every day. So that sort of, I became accustomed to sitting in a classroom per se. And so the day that I was, after 42 days, I left, but I signed up, my counselor had signed me up to check out ABE, before I even really had a place to live. And I did, you know, because at that point, again, like I've mentioned before, it wasn't because I wanted to better my life. I wanted to have some sort of idea of just how messed up I really was. Just, you know, I was looking at the brain damage I may have caused to myself, and having entered so many different states of psychosis out there, you know, there were a few individuals in detox that were concerned that I wasn't going to be able to come back mentally. And so I entered ABE with the idea that I was going to try my best. I was going to take the exams. I was going to, you know, work on the quizzes, piece my essays together and hand it in and just get a sense of just how lost I really was. And so I could be told, you know, Ryan, you know, you're handicapped, right? And it wasn't like that at all. And that led me to post-secondary education through some of the instructors there who suggested that I might want to pursue that.
So it sounds like it was a powerful affirmation of, hey, I am okay and I can do something with my life.
Exactly. In a very real way, because, again, where I've come from, you know, the streets, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all deceit. It's all deception. There's you know, no love and no one's solid and all those key words that people like to, you know, use to, mm-hmm. to, you know, talk about themselves. And so, but I found ABE to be very authentic in that sense, you know, from somebody who was coming from a very, you know, paranoid, sort of skittish kind of who's who, what's this all about and what do they want from me? But no, it wasn't that at all.
And you're currently working on a degree in liberal studies,
mm-hmm.
and one of the courses you're currently enrolled in is called the Anthropology of Homelessness.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about your studies?
That particular course is amazing. And I was speaking with my instructor, Helena, a couple of days ago because of the fact that some of the texts that students are required to read are stories about people who are you know, experiencing homelessness or abuse and street life and all that. And it really, again, triggered me because of as far as the course goes, I think it's a very real course. It really looks at homelessness and I had to go in and just mention to her that as a student of her course, I just to let her know what's going on. But so in that sense, you know, I can speak on that it's a very, it looks at, you know, mm-hmm. how homelessness does affect people who are homeless, but it also looks at the way that homelessness can change, like not structurally,
mm-hmm.
in that sense,
mm-hmm.
and what needs to be done.
Ryan, we just have a moment left, and I'd like to say it'd be wonderful to speak with you again after you graduate, and I know that you have some plans and ideas about moving forward in a helpful way to the community. But in the meantime, I'm wondering, in this last half a minute or so, is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation?
A little while ago, I was asked to speak to a group of young kids who are on their way to end up on the streets and whatnot. And, you know, so I spoke a bit about my story and where I came from and what they can expect. And, you know, a life of crime isn't necessarily what it's made out to be. And speaking about my experiences and having recovered and from you know, meth itself, I heard this little voice in the back, this little girl. She says, she asked me, I mean, you were, because her father is in the thick of addiction right now, and it just gave her such hope to know that there was an individual who, and not just one, but many individuals who can recover from active addiction. And just that little voice of that young child saying that there's hope for her and her father was beautiful.
Yeah. Ryan, thank you very much for coming in to share your story with us today.
Thank you.
We really appreciated it. Ryan Glover is a liberal arts student at Vancouver Island University. After living in active addiction on the streets of Victoria and Nanaimo, Ryan is now in recovery and hoping to graduate with a bachelor's degree this summer.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM. CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.